time for the lunch break on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. To be a part of the show, give us a call at 321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or tweet us at Lunch Break ESPN.
What's up? It's the Lunch Break on ESPN 106.7. Justin Ferguson, Painter Sharpless. Hello, Painter.
Hello.
Good list of things to discuss today. Auburn basketball back in action. A late tip tonight, 8 o'clock on the SEC Network. They take on the Furman Paladins. We'll talk to Greg Peterson about the Paladins and all things college basketball in hour number two. Hour number one, about 30 minutes from now, we will have Seth Emerson, who covers the Georgia Bulldogs for The Athletic, getting the Georgia side of the SEC Championship game on Saturday. And we'll have Brody Miller on tomorrow from the LSU side, previewing that big game in Atlanta. But yeah, Auburn basketball back in action. More fallout from the Iron Bowl. Recruiting, all that moving forward for the Tigers as we get closer to find out where the Tigers' bowl destination will be. And who knows, maybe somebody will hire a coach between now and then. Right before we went on the air, if you don't follow Bunky Perkins on Twitter.
Just a good follow in general.
There's a running, it's not really a joke as much as it is just kind of how funny it's actually happened. Bunky Perkins' brother.
Sort of a right place, right time thing, or he's just secretly well connected.
He's got connections, and he gets things done. And Bunky tweeted about just before he went on the air a picture, a very unflattering picture of Lane Kiffin, and he says, "My brother says it's done." And it's funny. It's like, we'll wait, because here's the thing: Florida Atlantic has to play UAB in the Conference USA Championship game.
That's a real point. That's a real reason. Also, I think we're still reeling from the stinging effects of a very well done, a phony account that says Ole Miss has hired
Mike Leach.
So we just want to hold off.
Yeah. But we had said it earlier this week. There might not be a better connection of the player and coach and fan base than Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss.
In terms of what the vibe he puts off vibe that school gives you.
Yep. This is a man who would enjoy some...
He likes to party,
boat
folks.
Shoes and partying and all that stuff.
You think Lane would enjoy... Hey, bangs are a good look on some.
Yeah.
You know, I think Lane and I could have a great time together, personally.
I
think we could jive, if you will.
Oh, yeah.
I definitely think he's going to enjoy Oxford, if this is at all true, which we hope it is here on the Lunch Break.
It makes more sense, though, because it's down. A lot of people had Arkansas getting – it was either going to be Arkansas getting Lane Kiffin, or is it Ole Miss getting Lane Kiffin? And Ole Miss fits a whole lot better than Arkansas to me.
I think he there could have some genuine success. Now, it might not be – winning an SEC championship, but I do think...
Look, nobody's going to win an SEC championship. I don't think at either of those schools.
But if you can get to... And this has sort of been the thing we've thrown out there with some of these schools. If you're Arkansas or Ole Miss, and
you're a fun 8-4.
Yeah, and then every 4 years, you're making a run at teams like Alabama, LSU, and Auburn. Maybe you knock one or two of them off from time to time. I think right now, while Ole Miss fans would desperately like to get back to that Hugh Freeze time...
But that's what they were.
Right. I mean, they...
At their very best,
their
they were
peak,
a 10-win team.
They were upsetting Alabama, but still not winning their division.
Yes. They were still dropping games they shouldn't lose, on top of being just annoying for really good teams. I like that. If that ends up being the move...
Even if Kiffin doesn't get them quite to the level they're at with Freeze, where they were... double-digit win teams. I think he can attract some players to Oxford. Right. He's had no trouble doing that at FAU. Now, he's done it through a different route.
Might have to do that route at Ole Miss, too.
Yeah, especially those first couple of years going with guys who have...
Pretty stock junior college scene in Mississippi, for sure.
Interesting couple of seasons for him at FAU, too.
Yeah,
good first year, then a bad one.
Last year, they were really bad, and then this year, they've bounced back in a pretty big way. I'd like to see Lane Kiffin back. And I think that my dream scenario would be Lane going to Ole Miss and Leach going to Arkansas. And like, imagine now. All right, so you're going to take Chad Morris and Matt Luke and replace them with probably the two most outgoing personalities for completely different reasons in college football among head coaches. I like that. I like that.
What are those reasons?
For different reasons?
Yes.
Leach is the, you know, rambling, you know, history buff who says weird things from, well, a lot of weird things from time to time and has this.
Weird is putting it nicely.
He's just very eccentric, whereas Lane Kiffin is very much, you know, king of the bros, honestly. I mean, and it's completely different, but like, it'd make for a better SEC media days.
Not only that, but I think that it accomplishes the goal they want, which is to be a team that's above 500. Yeah,
be entertaining.
Like put some tails in seats. Have some good offenses.
And neither of those teams had that at the end of the season. And you can debate about whether, you know, Matt Luke needed to get fired or not, and you can debate about whether they should have given Chad Morris more time. The fact of the matter is, nobody was watching Ole Miss and Arkansas at the
end
of the season.
And Kiffin may never get them to championship caliber, partly just, I don't know if he's that good of a coach, but certainly he's been a good coordinator. Mm-hmm. He's had success at FAU.
I mean, I think if he'd have stayed at Tennessee, he'd have had him clicking. It was just USC, man. I don't know. Like,
and I think he learned some, like a lot of people. Like, he was so young when he got that job.
Yeah.
About 10 years later, I bet you he would say also I would do so as he has now
working under Saban matured as a coach,
and he's still probably getting embarrassed at Southern Cal. Like,
yeah.
I would imagine
getting fired at an airport is
he was a laughing stock, and then people railed against Saban for hiring him because he was sort of the laughing stock, and he then became one of the hottest names in football for a brief period of time.
He's the best coordinator they've had.
They took a running back, a quarterback converted to running back, converted back to quarterback, and did that.
Can you imagine Lane Kiffin with 2019 Alabama's skill talent?
Yeah, and it'd be a lot of fun.
It would be a lot of fun. Like, it's Steve Sarkisian is a good coach. He's a good coordinator. You can say whatever you want about him personally or you know, some of the mistakes he's made in his past. I don't matter. He's a good coach and a good coordinator. Mike Loxley was a good coach and a good coordinator. But Lane, like what Lane did before Alabama really blew up in terms of the offensive skill talent they had. Like he had, you know, he had Amari. I think he had Amari at the very end. Might not have been. Or no, he didn't have Amari. He had
Ridley.
He had Calvin Ridley, yeah. It works. Like he did some real damage with those guys.
And with the recipe of what he has put together at FAU, mm-hmm. leads me to believe that he would be willing to take some guys with second chances.
Yeah.
He would be willing
to. Just what you got to do at Ole Miss, I think.
Yeah, and I think he would be a good recruiter. Like, he's done it.
Sure.
You know,
yeah.
He can relate. Like, for all the crap we give him about being king of the bros, like, he seems to be able to resonate with some young people.
And I think with Arkansas, you just say, hey, we're gonna do the thing that is different. You know, we're gonna be like, at least in the state of Mississippi, there's more talent there than the state of Arkansas. Like, Sosa Ajeem is like one of the only five stars that state has ever really produced.
I think the other thing with Kiffin that is attractive to me is that we are so used to coaches taking themselves so seriously.
Right.
And I think that in all of this, what gets lost, Justin, is that he is both a good coach and a good recruiter and doesn't take himself too seriously publicly. You cannot take yourself too seriously publicly and still be a hard worker.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes people see him having a good time, see him being a troll on Twitter, and they think, kind of a good coach, but a second-tier coach, if you will.
Yeah.
And maybe that's what he is, but
might be good enough for Ole Miss. Better than Matt Luke.
People will care. You know, so again, we're saying all this halfway jokingly, but also,
I think there's a real possibility
I do too.
Which also makes me think, is Mike Norvell going to Florida State?
Well, that's because that was what I guess. Who did we talk to? Was it John Luke? Who and
thought
that,
at Ole Miss? And look, that makes a ton of sense. But if Ole Miss is getting somebody other than Norvell, to me, that strikes me as, well, Norvell's going somewhere else, right? Because you wouldn't pass Mike Norvell over for Lane Kiffin, I don't think. So you,
I don't think most schools would. I can see
Norvell at Florida State would be a lot of fun, and I think that would be a good. I think that would be a good move.
Speaking of which, what do you think? This is unrelated, but kind of related. What does Taggart do next? Because it's been an interesting career for him between taking a short ride at Oregon, kind of a rebuild, a reasonably successful rebuild at Western Kentucky, and then whatever debacle that became at Florida State.
I don't know the feelings between the two sides a few years ago when this happened, but if I'm South Florida...
Yeah, it's not working out so great with old Charlie.
And, well, they already fired him.
Yeah.
And so, Taggart, your best run...
Was with that guy.
Was with him.
Well, it keeps going back to...
And we saw Schiano go back to Rutgers. We saw Schiano go back to Rutgers, and it's a different situation. There was more time between, but, like, I think Taggart would... If South Florida got Taggart back, this would be great, and I don't know if it would necessarily be a case where Taggart would have to go get that next big job. Like, he could...
After having
He might be satisfied at just doing this.
After having some relative success, South Florida might not be in a position to be too picky. Like, they had some success there for a stretch run of time. And if Taggart
was really good there.
If you can get back to that, I mean, it's better than what you've been doing of late.
Yeah, and that's the thing is I don't know what the fan base thought of him or the administration.
Or how when he left, right?
When he left for Oregon and then when he left Oregon after just 1 year to go to Florida State. I think South Florida would be a great fit for him. I think that would be a spot – there. Speaking of coaches, while we're going through it, Mike Leach gets an extension at Washington State. It's just a 1 year extension, and I think it's just triggering in his contract where it's like, hey, if you do all these things, boom, you get another year on your contract. The big one yesterday, though, was turns out that the reports were incorrect. USC is not firing Clay
right.
Helton, and Clay Helton will be back in 2020.
Well, there was
USC.
A lot of back and forth
is
about
a bad. Whew, that was a bad reaction by that fan base. That fan base was not happy.
I think my feelings, and I know Helton is a guy that around here people like because he used to play here, is one of how I felt about Gus Malzahn at Auburn. If first off, I am not as down on Malzahn as many people are. However, if you are one of those people and obviously doing this show, we know there are people out there that feel very strongly about this.
Mm-hmm.
Who were you so confident that you were going to get that is exponentially better? And I still would not be surprised. I know that everyone, at least in the USC camp, wanted it to be Meyer, understandably so. I don't think that's off the table a year from now, but I'm not.
And it sounds like James Franklin might be getting an extension at Penn State. Or there's going to be a board meeting coming up, to a specially called meeting or something. And usually that's like, I wonder if USC put some feelers out to Franklin, to Urban Meyer.
That's how I feel about this.
And then it didn't
just
work.
Bites.
And that's the thing. It's like, if you're not going to get the two biggest...
Just stick with it for now. It's not been good, but it's not been an absolute train wreck. I guess it's not been good, though.
No, it hasn't been great. And USC, they've got a good quarter. Like, Keaton Slovis was really good this season. And I know Utah's having a moment right now, and Utah might... end up being in the playoff this season. But, think about it this way. USC is still going to be the most talented team in the country. Now, this will be very interesting. Right now, USC's recruiting class, with all of this the fury of this fan base.
The sound and fury.
Do you know where USC's recruiting class is ranked right now?
I don't. I should, but I don't.
I'm going to give you two teams that are ones above them and below them. So, like, they're sandwiched between two teams, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is going to be, and I want you to pay attention because I want to see what your reaction is to this.
Write these down.
All right. USC is currently ranked in recruiting. The team above them, Louisiana Lafayette. The team below them, Troy.
That's bad company for USC for a number of reasons. One,
this is a team that should be pulling top five classes every year.
They are one of the most historic teams in NCAA football. Putting that aside, though, because we've seen programs like Tennessee falter with lots of good history, they're in LA.
Yeah.
And people are like, well, the campus isn't that nice.
UCLA,
I don't care. They're going to be celebrities in LA.
UCLA's down right now.
Oregon and Utah are your two best
Stanford's
teams.
Stanford's down right now.
Yeah, and
Cal, like you should be able to be like, all
right,
California,
I got
it. You should
be running through that conference.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
Yeah. And like Oregon and Washington are going to recruit well enough in our well-coached teams that they're going – in the north, they're going to be problems. But in the south, you got to think USC has to deal with – in the Pac-12 South, they have to deal with Utah, which Utah is a team that nobody wants to – Utah is like semi-West Coast Wisconsin, where you're just like – they're not recruiting at a super high level, but they get good enough players and they have a system that you're like, oh, crap, we got to play Utah. They got to play Utah. The two Arizona schools, which right now Arizona is shrug. I don't know what you feel about Arizona football. Arizona State, good right now, fine-ish under Herm Edwards. They had some really weird, bizarre losses this season, though. Colorado, which is still rebuilding, and UCLA. That's it.
With the resources, the history, a fan base that surprisingly cares a lot for as big of a city and as big of a professional sports town as it is. This is Helton's record, by the way. And I said it wasn't a train wreck. I believe that's true, but this also has just not been
great.
Good. It's not been consistent. 2015, and you get a little bit of leeway here. First year, 5-4. You know,
in the Pac-12.
Yeah. Well, excuse me, 5-4 overall.
Oh, they had to vacate some.
Was that the year that he? What year did he pick up?
Oh, he was an interim. Mm-hmm. He was an interim. They kept going. So yeah, it was after they fired Sark.
But then they had two good years: 10 wins, 11 wins, 10-3, 7-2 in conference, 11-3, 8-1. So you find some promise there.
Played Penn State in a bowl game,
right? But 18 losing record at 5-7, losing record in the conference, and then this year just average 8-4, 7-2. But as you mentioned, average in a conference that, quite frankly, is not very good.
Right, and their recruiting class is not great right now. And the guy they had, the five-star quarterback they had committed, flips to Alabama, could start at Alabama next year.
Mm.
Who does USC start the season with next year? Alabama.
That writes itself. The poetry there is beautiful. Also, I'm not convinced, and I could be because we're seeing a few. We act like it's all these freshmen, but at the high-profile schools where the talent's there, he may well start next year. But after watching Mac Jones, I'm not so sure that he's just going to waltz
job. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But
still,
the point is there. He's got the sheer talent to insert himself.
Yeah.
The coaches are not.
And Slovis is a good quarterback. Like, and USC is going to be talented, but they are not what they used to be. And Clay, I don't think Clay Helton's an actively bad coach. I just think the program's in a bad situation right now where they have all these resources and talent, and just something isn't clicking. Something's not working together. But look, it hasn't been that way since Pete Carroll. Like USC, if you think USC is a team that should be competing for national championships most years, or at least being the favorite in the Pac-12, which would make you a playoff contender, they're not it. And it's kind of crazy. And so when they keep him, to me, that's a sign of, okay, they probably looked at Urban Meyer. Okay, they probably looked at they probably looked at James Franklin. And then they couldn't get anybody else. Like, this isn't a high, like, is PJ Fleck going to be your head coach at USC? No. Like, USC is going to be a heavy hitter, I think, if they're going to replace a guy who hasn't been horrible but hasn't been great. So I'm very interested to see what the future. Like, USC could turn around and win the Pac-12 next year.
The funny thing here, too, is after the season that Ed Orgeron's had for the last 2 years, but especially this year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to your larger point about the program overall.
He was such a good interim for them.
Yeah, he was.
But LSU was the one that decided, let's take a chance on him, see if it works.
But it wasn't their first choice, either.
No.
So it is funny to look back, and I count myself as one of those people that, if I was USC, could understand moving in a different direction from Orgeron.
But they hired Steve Sarkisian.
Yeah, well, my point is that has not aged well.
Right.
Ed Orgeron has become one of the most likable figures in college football and currently is one of the most successful.
Yep.
And they're still trying to find stability in that program, which may be part of the reason why they're keeping Helton on the board. What do you think about James Franklin's coaching ability? One of the things I'm hearing from some folks is great motivator, great seller, great recruiter. I honestly just don't pay that much attention to him, but I think he was great at Vanderbilt.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, he was.
I mean, to get 9 wins in consecutive years there is preposterous.
Yes.
Is he, in your mind, when you watch them play, do you think that's a good coach on a Saturday? Like, that's a guy that Okay, that was I just don't pay enough attention to James Franklin, really, to know if because there's no doubt he can sell his program.
In game, big game situations, I'm not going to say constantly, but he's had a lot of notable, like, just
a lapse
of mistakes. Like, why are you making this decision then? Why is your play calling like this in this situation? Why is it? And it all kind of falls on him. I think he's a really good. I think he's great at all the other stuff. Kind of average on game days.
Well, I say
and
that.
Good assistants can mask
that's
some of that.
Exactly. So my point was, okay, you get say he because we keep making the connection that it's Meyer or Franklin are the two splashy choices at Southern Cal.
I think Franklin would eat it up.
That's
at
what I'm
USC.
Saying. Just like, hire good assistants, and then you go sell USC to college students.
But USC is a very unstable situation right now,
which I can understand his pause in doing so because he's got.
He's got it made at Penn State.
Think what you think about Penn State and the fact that they're perpetually in third place.
They're kind of like Auburn.
Yeah, but it's like at least he knows they're probably going to be in contention to win double-digit games.
They're better off than Michigan is right now.
Yeah.
Like, yes, it's tough, Penn State. I know you want to be in the playoff and compete for championships, but like Ohio State is doing what Ohio State's doing right now. And there's a lot of similarities between that and what Auburn had to feel with Alabama. And Penn State, like Auburn,
has fared pretty well. They just don't have the hardware to show for it.
Right. And
or as much of it anyway.
Yeah. And has also beaten Ohio State in recent years. It's just you gotta kinda turn the corner. But he's got it made at Penn State. And like Penn State historically is it's like Auburn. They're not Ohio State. They're not Michigan.
I think they always feel overshadowed because they know their history is good. And so there's this little brother mentality of like, yeah, you pay attention to Ohio State and you pay attention to Michigan, but we're right here. We're doing our thing. And
there was a run there in the '80s when they were awesome. Like they were really, really up there in the elites in college. Again, kind of like Auburn was.
And speaking of Auburn, one of the things we haven't touched on much yet since the Iron Bowl, and you mentioned this at the beginning of the show, Alabama has been on this unprecedented run.
Mm-hmm.
It's been perhaps the most impressive thing we've ever seen where a team is more or less
in this age.
Yes, yeah. More or less averaging a national title every other season. And up until this year where they won't make the playoff has always been in the playoff. They mm-hmm. almost had a three-peat were it not for the kick six. It's been incredible.
Yeah.
On the other hand, in that incredible stretch run Alabama's had where they seemingly can't be, but like they're one of the three best teams in the country most years.
Every single year.
Auburn has what, gone 4-6 in the last decade in that run?
Yeah.
I mean, that to me is, and a lot of that has revolved around Gus Malzahn.
It's the whole thing, though, with Saban not beating a good Auburn team. Like, there have been some really, really good teams in the SEC in the run of Saban's run that cannot beat him. And Auburn's done it several times with Gus Malzahn being involved. And so, yeah, moving forward, and I think a lot of people had this takeaway from it from this game. Malzahn being the only guy who's beaten Saban three times, like that's or in the you know and being the executive guys, like that's significant. His next step, and it's easier said than done. His next step for the psyche of this fan base.
LSU, Georgia, but probably Georgia first,
Georgia,
because since 2000, they've owned it, and they have done well against Malzahn.
At least at LSU, you play LSU and Jordan-Hare. It's a close game, or you're beating them. Like,
had they lost up until last year with Malzahn as coach? Because they stomped him in 14 in his second year. In 16, they won that one in a crazy fashion, and then in 18, they lost a close one after having a double-digit lead.
But Georgia, I mean, really since 2000.
Yeah, it
Georgia
goes back
taken,
past.
Has taken goes, this rivalry by the throat. And you've had, and the other thing with Malzahn is like, it's not like they've been waxed or like close to like not being competitive like once or twice, but like they've had some games where it's been close, like the 14-6 game, the Isaiah McKenzie punt return game, you know, this past one, you can also point to it. And so just get over that hump, because right now you're doing better than anyone has against Nick Saban in Alabama. It's not 500, but it's not bad at all.
Well, considering most coaches can't beat them once, most coaches
3-5 ain't bad.
Kirby Smart, we talk about the talent he has and how it beats out Auburn's on paper anyway. But he hadn't figured out how to beat his former boss.
Right. So you got to be the team that beats that, and then you got to be the team that also takes steps against LSU. But that rivalry is so weird and bizarre that like I don't Georgia's the one that you got to take. And if you can make that next step against Georgia, that will go a long way into cementing yourself as a coach that people want. People not only be like, yeah, I guess we'll keep him around, or we'll see what he's got.
You're going to excite a fan base when you're beating
him. He does his job.
Right.
He does his job mostly well. You go from that to being a guy that people want to stay around right here.
When we come back, we'll have...
Speaking of Georgia.
Yeah, we'll have Seth, your colleague, on the line. What do you think Seth will say about this SEC? Have you chatted with him throughout the week?
Yeah, so it's going to be very interesting. There's a lot of people who think this Georgia defense can kind of do some of the things that Auburn's defense did,
I believe,
against LSU, but there's some things about it. LSU moved the ball. Auburn did a really good job of forcing turnovers, fourth down stops, stuff like that. And Georgia's going to have to do that. And then I'm really interested in seeing what Seth has to say about a Georgia offense that has played like it's had one hand tied behind their back this season. And I think there's a few fingers on that other hand that they're going to be busted up after the injuries that they've had.
You're on the Abby Award-winning Best Sports Show in Alabama for 2 years in a row. The Lunch Break on ESPN 106.7.
Welcome back to Lunch Break on ESPN 106.7. Justin Ferguson, Painter Sharpless. SEC Championship game on Saturday. Georgia and LSU, the big one in Championship Saturday. We've been talking about it throughout the week. We want to get some expert perspective from Georgia, and for that we turn to our friend from The Athletic, Seth Emerson, who covers the Bulldogs. Seth, how are you?
Good, good. Is that game this weekend?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. It's going to be a very interesting one, Seth. And the first question I have here, there's going to be a lot of talk about the defense for Georgia and how they match up against LSU's offense, and we'll get to that. But I want to ask you first, though, what can we expect from this Georgia offense with, you know, George Pickens out for the first half, Lawrence Cager done? There's also the whole question about the health of DeAndre Swift. What are we going to see from Georgia's offense this week?
Well, if you go back in time, and if you go back to, like, just after the Texas A&M game, mm-hmm. and you told Georgia fans that going into the SEC championship, they're going to be without Lawrence Cager, who had already missed some games, but the expectation was he would be able to play, and then he gets this ankle injury, and that they wouldn't have George Pickens for the first half of the game, and that DeAndre Swift, there would be some uncertainty about his full health.
Mm-hmm.
Then I think everyone at that point would have been like, okay, yeah, we're done. There's no chance. But that happens, and the nature of fandom and kind of the way it is people are talking themselves back into Georgia has a chance. And I think that doesn't go for just fans. I think that goes for experts.
Mm-hmm.
That goes for people like me. I think if you told me that they'd be without all those guys, you'd say, all right, well, forget it. And they're not without DeAndre Swift, but it's kind of at the point where you worry, does he take one bad hit and he's out? And I'm sorry, if DeAndre Swift's not playing, then they're done.
Yeah,
that's it. Let's go home. He's that important to the offense. It's not like they don't have other running backs, but he's just a level above. So ultimately, this game, you know, it's on Jake Fromm. It's on James Coley to call a really good game. LSU's defense is better than I think the numbers indicate, but it's not a shutdown defense. It's not as good as Georgia's. So Georgia can get points, but I think they know they've got to get a lot more points than they're used to getting. So they've got to be on point. And the most important thing they can do, though, is just not turn the ball over. The vital stat about Georgia's offense is that, as disappointing as it's been, the one game that Jake Fromm threw an interception in, he threw three, was South Carolina. They lost that game. He hasn't thrown another interception this year, and they've won all those games. Although they've had some fumbles, including DeAndre Swift had two against Georgia Tech, which made it 17-7 at the half. DeAndre Swift fumbles it twice against LSU. Georgia's going to be in trouble.
Seth, Justin asked me not to call you Dr. Seth, so we will just stick with Seth. You can find him on Twitter at Seth W. Emerson.
My wife is a doctor, but Why would anybody call me doctor?
Yeah, I was about to say. I thought your wife was a doctor. So the real Dr. Emerson. We're going to ask the non-Dr. Emerson.
So you just mentioned Swift, and I figured he was key. I didn't realize just how important he would be. What about Pickens and his absence in the first half of the game?
Yeah, I mean, if you're Georgia, you just need to get to the second half.
Yeah,
they knew going into Georgia Tech they had the same situation, that Cadre was done and that they only had Pickens for a half. We didn't know because the suspension wasn't made public until basically the game was happening. It was clear he wasn't playing. But they also only had a couple days of knowledge of Cadre's injury. I don't know how long they knew on Pickens. They've known the whole week, so they can game plan around it more. They've got other receivers. They've got some players. They don't have, you know, Cadre and Pickens are both big targets. They've got another target, a redshirt sophomore who's 6'4", and 6'5", actually, same height as Cadre and Pickens, who's Matt Landers. But he's been wildly inconsistent this year. So they're probably going to depend more on the speedier guys who are not short, like Tyler Simmons, Demetrius Robertson, Dominic Blaylock. Those guys have made some plays this year. They're just not, you know, they're not as much the back, and Kyrus Jackson's another guy. They've definitely got options, but I think they need to go to the tight ends more. Those are their biggest guys. And that's, I mean, you know, but you also just get back to the running game. They're going to have to move the ball more with the running game.
Seth Emerson covers the Georgia Bulldogs. You can follow him on Twitter at Seth W. Emerson. The defense for Georgia, I think it's the best defense in America. The stats and all the advanced numbers are at least really close to it. LSU's offense, Auburn really has been the only team, like somewhat of Mississippi State, able to slow them down this season. What is Georgia, as much as you can tell, what is Georgia's kind of game plan or mindset trying to go into this game where you face a team like LSU that has been so red hot on offense, but yet Georgia comes in with saying, hey, we probably have the best defense in America. What's kind of that matchup from the Georgia perspective looking like?
The best defense in America thing is definitely the best in the SEC.
Yeah.
Let's check back after we see what they do against LSU.
Sure.
Ohio State and Clemson and Utah are pretty salty. This Georgia defense, I've been a skeptic all year, and even I've come aboard. Like, all right, yeah, all right, fine. They are definitely elite. But that means that you're one of the elite. So
right.
They have not, I mean, who's the best quarterback they've faced? Kyle Trask, maybe.
Yeah.
Bo Nix, Kellen Mond, Ian Book. You know, those four of them. And Bo Nix may someday be definitely above all those three. But that's the group. No one in Joe Burrow's category. And they are probably facing, in Clyde Edwards-Helaire, the best running back they've faced all year, too. So you put all that into account and you say, ooh, you know, this is going to be something. But they have the ability, because of their depth, to spread out and put a bunch of different combination of guys on the field. That can be a blessing and a curse. I mean, usually it's a blessing. What I wonder about in this game, and I don't want to get too much football nerdy dumb here, but
oh, yeah, we love that. Go ahead.
But what LSU does is they spread out four and five wide a lot of times, but it's not really receivers. They tend to be going up-tempo and keeping the same players on the field. They're just spreading out their tight end or their running back and moving those guys around. So if they do that, then Georgia's ability to sub and go deep on its roster, because they play 24 guys on defense.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mean just garbage time. I mean like 24.
Yeah.
It gets beyond 24 when they start getting in garbage time. Well, that's a strength. Is that much as much of a strength if LSU's not giving them time to sub? Then that's a problem. LSU's going to throw a lot of slants, going to throw across the middle of the field a lot. Georgia, that's kind of the one area that they've been a little susceptible because, and this is kind of what I come back to with Georgia's defense, and that I don't think they can hold LSU completely in check this game. They haven't really faced a team that comes out and throws on them first. they have faced a lot of teams that still really try to run on them for some reason.
Yeah.
And Georgia's run defense is better than its pass defense.
Yep.
Run defense is great. Its pass defense is good. Well, LSU is perfectly content, despite Clyde Edwards-Helaire, to pass the ball all the time if it's working. So I think it's going to be key for Georgia, those first and second downs. Take away the pass, and then they have to do it again on third down. But force them into some longer ones, and then they can get pressure. Georgia's sack numbers are deceiving. They're only middle of the pack in the SEC in sacks, but they get a lot more pressures than that. They've just faced a lot of mobile quarterbacks. And by the way, they have not faced a quarterback like Joe Burrow, who is as good running and passing the ball. I mean, Bo Nix is a little bit of a kind of poor man's Joe Burrow this year.
Sure.
Yeah. And Bo Nix did it a little bit, but not as much as Joe Burrow can do.
Yeah. Seth, I don't want to skip past this game because it is important. And of course, Georgia has a chance to still make the playoff. But I wanted to ask you about Georgia and its program and the fan base. What happens on Saturday? What happens moving forward if Georgia ends up losing to a better LSU team like they are on paper and Georgia misses a chance to go to the playoff again for the second straight year and plays in another New Year's Six Bowl, but it seems like once again wasn't able to get quite over the hump? What is the mindset kind of the fan base? What's the reaction going to be when if they have to go to the Sugar Bowl again or, you know, there? Because I felt like a lot of people saw this team had so much potential, and it's just kind of like a supercharged version of what Auburn was for most of the year. It was the offense that kind of held them from, I think, becoming, you know, a playoff team. If that happens, like, what where are we thinking about, you know, Georgia, and what does that mean for them moving forward, trying to fix that offense or make it better?
Right. Well, the biggest discussion topic this week around Georgia's message boards, Twitters, whatever, other than the SEC championship, has been Mike Bobo.
Yeah.
Because he has seen, although he wasn't for much of his tenure as Georgia's offensive coordinator, but deservedly so, he is seen as the guy who was running the show when Georgia's offense was at its best earlier this decade. 2012, 2013, 2014, they set records. They set Georgia, it still stands, Georgia's scoring record in 2014 with, God love him, Hudson Mason as the quarterback. And a revolving door at running back, including some very good ones, but still. He is now available, and there's been a lot of discussion about going and getting him. James Coley is still the offensive coordinator. I know Kirby Smart really likes James Coley. I also know that Kirby Smart and Mike Bobo are very close. So there's going to be a lot of discussion if Saturday they don't win this game, particularly if the offense is once again seen as the problem or one of the problems. And that's going to be topic A, B, and C, because obviously the defense is not a problem. The recruiting around here, the financial support, none of those kind of intangibles are the problem. Everyone looks at the offense. And you guys know the season isn't technically over, but if you're not playing in the playoff, the offseason has begun. And so as soon as Sunday happens, if Georgia doesn't win that game, and the offense becomes the focus and what Kirby Smart decides to do about that offense.
He's Seth Emerson. You can find him with The Athletic. Speaking kind of about this Georgia offense and looking at things broadly, Seth, publicly I know what his answer would be, but your guess as to how Kirby feels watching Justin Fields at Ohio State they're back in the SEC championship game, but at the same time, it's hard not to look at Fields and a somewhat struggling Georgia offense, go, man, could this have been different?
Yeah. That's been a topic du jour. Those of us who were around understand that it's revisionist thinking to think that Georgia could have kept Justin Fields.
Yeah.
I look at it this way. They recruited Justin Fields for a reason. They're not surprised he's doing what he's doing at Ohio State. They recruited Justin Fields when they had Jacob Eason and Jake Fromm. So that was just, this guy's in our backyard. He's really good. He doesn't necessarily fit the offense we run, but man, he's good. So they went and they got him. And then guess what happened? When Fields committed, they were in the midst of an unexpected run to a national championship game,
yep,
led by a true freshman. And then Fields comes in, and Jake Fromm leaves no opening to give Justin Fields a shot. There was never any real moment where it's like, well, we got to give this guy a shot.
No.
There was never any buzz coming out of practice that, oh, man, number one's better. Got to go to him. And Jake Fromm has the support of that locker room, like on both sides of the ball. He just kind of got that magnetic personality, leadership type of kid. But, yeah, I mean, kind of a nightmare scenario for Georgia is Jake Fromm having a really bad SEC championship game, Georgia losing, and Justin Fields going on and winning the national championship or just playing in the playoff. It's revisionist thinking to say Georgia should have done something to hold on to Justin Fields, but it's what people are going to talk about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just feel like it's just bad timing more than anything, especially when it came to Fields and like you said, the emergence of Fromm that I don't think really anybody saw coming at that point in time. Seth, we appreciate your time as always. Looking forward to seeing what you and Brody Miller come up with from the SEC title game on Saturday. You can follow him on Twitter at Seth W. Emerson. Read him at theathletic.com. Thank you, Seth.
Not Dr. Emerson.
Not Dr. Emerson.
All right.
The non-Dr. Emerson. Appreciate it, Seth. All right, that was Seth Emerson of The Athletic. Again, we will talk to Brody Miller tomorrow to get the LSU perspective from this one. Let's head a break. When we come back, who knows?
On ESPN 106.7.
It's going to be a quick segment. Painter, a lot of people yesterday, last night, I think, kind of discovered the Spotify unwrap thing for the year. And this year was important because you got the decade. I got it. We got to go through yours at some point. Maybe that'll be something we do in the second hour.
All right.
Like, we can't play it out loud, but you saw through your year, and I think you were surprised by your results.
I was. There's a song at the top that I know I listened to a lot in the spring, but
yeah,
it didn't feel like I listened to it as much as I did some other songs.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't thrilled with my songs of the decade. I really thought there would be a few other artists at the top, but apparently not.
Yeah. What we'll do is we'll go on to the website, and it should give you a lot more information.
I've had three different Spotify accounts
because
I've lost passwords or whatever. So like I've had to, I'd be more curious to know if I could bridge all those together. Is that about the most normal? You expect, now that you heard me say I lost the password to.
Can't you just reset it?
Yeah, but I did that. And like, for whatever reason, I eventually just had to get a new account. So I'm sorry.
Oh, wow.
You thought about that for a second and weren't surprised at all.
No, not surprised, but it is still pretty funny.
It's preposterous that it could happen more than one time, maybe. One time, maybe.
I have discovered on this thing that some of y'all listen to a ton of Spotify. I thought I was higher up than I usually am this year. I was like over 20,000, I think, was about around the minimum. I saw people 60,000, 70,000, like, it's like that's all y'all doing. Y'all are like constantly having it on in the background. I also think I listen to too many podcasts.
So that's how
I think that keeps my number down.
Yeah, I would be curious to look at, and it's all like the same four podcasts for me.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, is that a car alarm?
Sounds like it.
That's not ideal. Yeah, it's like Levitard and like two other podcasts.
Right, exactly. So it is very interesting though. And then some of the we're going to have to do the look.
We'll get to that eventually because we're going to have to get to break here in a moment. You have What's On Tonight coming up. Do we have a good slate for What's On Tonight?
Decent, not great.
It's a big women's basketball evening tonight,
and it's a thin night for sports content. But it'll be all right. Auburn basketball's playing.
That's right. We'll talk about that.
That'll be what you're going to be doing.
All right, stick around in a few minutes. Greg Peterson, speaking of basketball, will join us. But before we do that, we'll get into What's On Tonight.
The Abbey Award-winning Lunch Break.
Remember, the podcast of The Lunch Break presented by University Ace Hardware are available on ESPNAU.com and the ESPN 106.7 Podcast Center, SoundCloud, iTunes, Spotify. Wherever you listen to your podcast, University Ace is your Auburn helpful place located next to the movie theaters.
Yes.
All right. We're going to wrap up hour number one with what's on tonight. Hour number two, Greg Peterson joins us at the top of the next hour to talk a little bit of Auburn Furman and a lot of college basketball across this great land.
Time now for so great. What's on tonight.
All right, the headliner tonight, of course, SEC Network at 8, Furman, number 14, Auburn. We'll talk with Greg a little bit more about these Furman Paladins, learn more about them. But Furman, not exactly the team that they were last year. They've got some really good talent.
Yeah, they got a trio of scorers that look like they could be a problem.
Shoot a lot of threes, but not as tall as Auburn, not as experienced as Auburn. They'll try to force some turnovers, so Auburn's going to have to be really careful with the ball in this one.
Yeah, they've been good at forcing steals. Auburn, I think, will counter in this game nicely.
Fox, 7:20 tonight, Thursday Night Football. A pair of 6-6 NFC teams that people thought were actually going to be Super Bowl contenders this season. That'd be the Dallas Cowboys Yikes. And the Chicago Bears.
Huh.
So, the last time we saw Dallas, and the last couple times we've seen Dallas, they've gotten shut down on offense after everyone was praising Dak Prescott.
Yes, that's a thing people like to do.
The Bills got them last week in the Thanksgiving game. We know how great the Bills' defense is. The Bears, outstanding defense. It's going to be very interesting to see where this one goes. Can Mitchell Trubisky pick up on the... he had a decent second half against the Lions last week. So can these two teams find a way to put together an entertaining football game?
Please give Dak the max. I cannot wait for them to live with that and a bunch of first-round playoff exits for the entirety of his career.
NBA TV, 6:30 tonight. Rockets-Raptors. Sneaky entertaining game.
Yeah, so we talked, or at least I did. I don't know how much talking about this you did. I was super excited about the league and all its parity, and so far we've had kind of not the best season in the NBA at this point. Do you agree or disagree?
Yeah, it's been a little bit lower key, but... It's just different.
Early, yeah it's early. We'll find out. A couple
there's
superstars got injured.
Been some really disappointing. And that's the other thing, too. NBC Sports Network 2:15 this afternoon. Arsenal taking on Brighton and Hove Albion.
Any feelings here about how this one goes?
Arsenal could really use a win. They got rid of Unai Emery very recently, and they could use a bounce back effort. Brighton's been a team that's... Brighton's one of those teams in the mid-table that you just don't want to face because they've got some real quick guys on the outside. By the way, yesterday, Manchester United 2-1 win over Tottenham.
Are you feeling good? You feeling excited?
I mean, it's Tottenham, lads.
What's the deal? There's a running joke between Auburn and who is it?
There's a good amount of Auburn fans that I know that are Everton fans.
And is one of the men in Blazers guy like low key an Auburn fan?
So he
picked up on this?
Raj Bennett was obsessed with the hedge celebration. And so he was saying, Liverpool played Everton yesterday. That's the big rivalry in City, right? Like they're stadiums. You can see one from the other. That's how close Liverpool and Everton
are.
Little
Duke UNC action, taking it to the next level.
And he was saying, we got to take down the big evil red empire. And so he's kind of comparing himself, like, hey, could Everton have an Auburn moment? And they didn't. They got beat 5-2 yesterday, and I think that one was at Anfield. Anyway, the Christmas movie pick tonight, Painter. Your Christmas pick, the ultimate classic.
You're happy about this one.
ABC at 7, A Charlie Brown Christmas. Let's get it going.
Sweet, sweet C. Brown. Not Chris Brown.
Yeah, I know. There's no sweet, sweet
I do like his dancing, but he's got a... Ooh.
HBO 2, the Dan Peck Memorial HBO pick of the evening.
RIP, we love you, Dan.
HBO 2 at 11:40, RoboCop.
Pew, pew.
There's a classic right there.
Is that Mr. Schwarzenegger? Is that him? No. Which one is he?
He's the Terminator.
No, I thought he was in a different... I thought he was a cop in a movie.
He's been a cop in other movies, yeah.
Not RoboCop?
It's not RoboCop.
Who's in RoboCop?
I don't think there's anybody super famous.
Logan, get on it, please, sir. Please and thank you.
It was kind of a cult movie for a while.
We love cult classics around here. Do we love cults or just cult classics?
I would love cult classics more than actual cults.
Fair enough.
HGTV at 9. Finally, Painter House Hunters International is in Guam. Sheffield, England.
Gary Sheffield.
Home of the Blades.
You asked me the other night when we had Friendsgiving, and I did all that work, and Sarah just sat there not cooking any of the food.
At all.
Who was my favorite player growing up? Rafael Furcal, okay. And Gary Sheffield.
Gary Sheffield. Sheffield had the waggle.
Nothing like a small, unathletic white boy thinking that he was cool by doing that.
Well, here's the thing about Gary Sheffield, though. Famously, a short king. He was like 5'10", 5'11", one of the greatest power hitters of all time.
He had a rocket of an arm.
Yeah, but he was like 5'10". He wasn't like Aaron Judge and these big-time sluggers. So I can see why you'd identify with him.
Shout out. That's Hour 1. Greg Peterson joins us next. Stay tuned. This is The Lunch Break on ESPN 106.7.
Now, more from your daily lunchtime companions on The Lunch Break on ESPN 106.7. To be a part of the show, call 321-1390, toll free 1-888-382-7502, or tweet us at Lunch Break ESPN.
Hour number two underway here on The Lunch Break. Justin Ferguson, Painter Sharpless. Let's head to the phone lines where we have the machine, Greg Peterson, here to talk college basketball, one of our favorites. Greg, how are you today, my friend?
I'm doing great. How about you guys?
Doing well, doing well. All right, so not a whole lot of college basketball on tonight, but we wanted to bring you in to talk a little bit about Auburn, and more specifically, Auburn's opponent tonight, Auburn-Furman tonight. Furman was a team last season that got a lot of buzz. They brought back a decent bit of talent this year. They are... They have two losses already on the season to Alabama and South Florida. What should we expect for those of us who haven't watched a lot of Furman this year from this year's version of the Paladins when they play tonight in Auburn?
Expect Furman to be very versatile. What I like about this Furman team is that you've got a bunch of guys that they stand right around 6'6", 6'7". They all give you like 6 rebounds per game. I don't know how and I don't know why, but it feels like anyone that gets more than 7 rebounds is going to be docked, like, playing time or something like that. And anyone that gets less than 5, they get the same treatment as well. So it's one of those things where they do a good job of rebounding as a team. And they've got a bunch of guys like a Noah Gurley that are able to shoot right around the mid-30s from three-point range. They've got a good guard in Jordan Lyons that is able to give the team right around 16 points per game. But what I think is going to help out Auburn is the fact that this Furman team is not very deep. As we know, Auburn can really push the ball. And I think that might be a little bit of an undoing for Furman. It's just her lack of depth.
Yeah, it is really, really interesting to me, this Furman team this season. When you look at kind of the teams Auburn has played this season, they played Georgia Southern, Davidson, New Mexico, Richmond. Did any of those teams kind of – are they similar to what Furman does? Like, I'm trying to think, is there a team that you can think of that – might parallel what Auburn's going to get?
It's a little bit tough. If anything, it probably would be maybe a little bit of Richmond in regards to maybe the depth. But with that said, this is a little bit more of a unique team just because, like I said, they do a good job of rebounding as a team. But unlike last year when Furman had Matt Rafferty, a guy that led the team in points, rebounds, assists, he was essentially the Ethan Happ of the South, I would like to call it. You really just don't have that one alpha dog guy that's really going to pour it in there for Furman.
Mm. Greg Peterson joining us, all things college basketball, GUnit_81, and he can help you get some money on top of that. I wanted to ask you about one of the teams. We talked about last week, talked about Louisville being that team that could be the best in America. They're now number one. They just had a really good win over Michigan. Another team that I think has been kind of floating under the radar, and last night they really put on a show. Ohio State beating North Carolina by 25. What do you make of this Ohio State team? Because they have been really, really strong early in the season.
And what you love about Ohio State is the team defense. They have not allowed more than 65 points all year long. And one thing we know about North Carolina as well, this is a team that typically is so good at being able to rebound. They're one of the top teams in the country year after year at rebound rates. In that game, Ohio State won the battle on the glass by 16. This is a very complete team because it's not necessarily one guy every night that's going to give you 25 points. Sure, they do have a star in Caleb Wesson. He stands right around 6'9". He's able to shoot threes, but it's guys like Luther Muhammad, C.J. Walker, the transfer from Florida State, They just get contributions from all eight of their rotation guys night after night. And this is one of the most well-rounded teams in college basketball. And just an example of how good their defense is, Villanova, I think, has scored 75-plus points in all but one of their games so far this year. When they went on the road against Ohio State, they only could muster 51 points.
Greg, going off the Big Ten here real quick, what has happened to Michigan State?
It's one of these situations in which you don't have Joshua Langford in there. A lot of people expected him to be back because, as we know, towards the end of last year, he was out of the fold. He was a guy that was giving the team right around 15 points per game. And this is a little bit of the Tom Izzo, I guess you could call it, highs and lows, because with Tom Izzo, he always gets his team firing on all cylinders in February and March. But we've seen this quite a bit from Michigan State, in which they don't necessarily come out of the gate sharp. They take their lumps. They always schedule very tough. And this is a little bit surprising to me that they're doing this, but you can always expect Michigan State to lose a couple games. I still remember when they made their NCAA tournament run, I believe that it was in 2014 when they made the Final Four. There was a time in like late January in which we were sitting there like, is this team on the bubble? And then all of a sudden they really ascended in February and March. So I don't have as many concerns because the coach is Tom Izzo, but obviously it is a little bit of a slow start for them.
Greg, does anyone have a better color combo than Furman, and is it Northwestern? Also, what is a paladin?
Now, I do not know what a paladin is. I personally think that Furman should be called the Furries, because I think that would go very well. Just like Merrimack, the new D1 team, why are they called the Warriors? You missed a great opportunity by not calling Merrimack the Merrymen. I mean, everyone can see that coming. Exactly. So I do not know what a paladin is. I would think that it's probably like some mythical creature. With regards to a color combo, I've always been a fan of orange and blue teams, like the Bucknell Bison, the Cal State Fullerton Titans come to mind. That's always my favorite color combo.
Yeah, two things. One, great job of playing to your audience there, as the Auburn Tigers are orange and blue. Also, I might add, I wonder if there's anyone, since Greg can do all these obscure games, if he knows a startling amount of mascots. I wouldn't be surprised if he does.
What is your favorite mascot in college basketball?
I've always been a fan of Bison, like the North Dakota State Bison, right, the Bucknell Bison, teams like that. But how about the Golden Griffins of Canisius? That's one that's totally random.
That's a good one.
The Billikens of St. Louis, just these things where it's completely random, like the Youngstown State Penguins. Who can root against a penguin?
I'm with you.
Morgan Freeman's with you too.
Yeah, it's a good pick for sure. Hey, Greg, we appreciate you joining us as always. Tell everybody at home what you've got, where they can follow you, where they can listen to all your stuff, and then of course I got one more game for you to break down tonight.
You can follow me on social media at UnitArts41. That is the hub for everything that I do, and the big podcast I'm doing right now is the newly rebranded Hoopin' with Hoop. This is where I give you a side and total on every game, every day. I break down all these games. Auburn, Furman is certainly on there, like Mississippi State, Louisiana Tech. And then you're going to get the world of the weird games, like High Point against Elon. I break them all down, and it's all, like, totally free. You just have to go to wherever you get your podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, what have you. Tune in, and you get just analysis on every college basketball game every day delivered to your inbox.
And, of course, we got to wrap up with this. And like you said, not a whole lot of games tonight, but there's one I want to ask you about. I was going to go Elon High Point, but instead, tell me what I need to know about St. Francis and Hartford.
Hartford actually brings in a graduate transfer by the name of Tracy Carter. He comes in from Marquette. He was a pass-first point guard, and he's really been struggling. When he was at LaSalle last year, this is a man that's well traveled. He was shooting well from three towards the end of the year, but he's really seen a little bit of a fall off. They brought in a couple guys from the European part of the nation to be able to help out this team. They've got a bunch of 6'10" combo players, but they just haven't really done a good job of being able to rebound. They took a tough loss against SMU. And then when you take a look at the St. Francis of Brooklyn team, Chancey Hawkins has really adapted to being a sixth man, to being in the starting lineup, giving the team 15.5 points. This is a bunch that they got clobbered when they played against NC State, but I do like their offense. Right now we are seeing St. Francis of Brooklyn as a 3.5-point underdog. I think they can pull this win out outright.
All right, there he is, Greg Peterson, the machine, as always, giving us all you need to know about college basketball and trying to figure out what a paladin is. Thank you, Greg. We'll speak to you soon.
Thanks, Greg.
Always a pleasure, guys. Thank you.
All right, let's get to break. When we come back, we'll have a little bit more college basketball and college football talk, especially revolves to Auburn, and we'll take your phone calls.
This is the Abby Award-winning Lunch Break.
We appreciate Greg Peterson joining us there, and of course, Seth Emerson also joining us. We'll get to more Auburn hoops later on. Let's go to James now, who has been patiently waiting. James, thanks for calling. What's on your mind, my friend?
Well, I wanted to, the guest that you guys had on the last hour when he was talking about Justin Fields, I don't know if I've ever come on this show and told you what happened to Joe Burrows. Now, that guy that you guys had had on your show, he left out a little dirt, too, because Joe Burrows went through something a little similar. I don't know if I ever told you, but if I didn't, I'll tell you. When Joe Burrows was recruited, he was highly recruited coming to Ohio State. Urban Meyer was going to make him the guy.
But right. I think he was the Gatorade Player of the Year coming out of Ohio, wasn't he?
Yes. Yes. But listen, this guy, he was the guy. And Urban Meyer knew him. Well, he was comparing the guy to Alex Smith. He was talking about how I saw this guy 2 years in a row in the spring game. This guy was lighting it up, okay? Well, the way Urban Meyer spaced it out, he had it where Joe Burrows could play and then Haskins could come behind him. But what he didn't anticipate was JT Barrett coming back, because Urban Meyer went through this before with Florida when he thought Tebow was leaving. The NFL didn't want him. So Tim Tebow, the same face, he says, well, I'm coming back for my senior year. Dude, the NFL didn't want you, man. And the same thing happened with JT Barrett. JT Barrett came back for his senior year because the NFL told him, the scouts told him, dude, you need to come back for another year. So that messed everything up. But Joe Burrows was elevated to second string. Okay? Well, what happened in the spring game, Joe Burrows hurt his wrist. He fractured his wrist. So that elevated Dwayne Haskins to second string. Okay? That elevated Dwayne Haskins to second string. So when Barrett got hurt in the Michigan game, Haskins came in and saved the day and won the game for him against Michigan. Come the spring game, that following year, that same season, they opened the quarterback competition up with Joe Burrows and Haskins. Now, Cardale Jones let the cat out the bag because those former Buckeyes was there, and Cardale Jones and Burrows had beat him out, and it wasn't even close, but they gave it to Haskins. But Chris Carter was saying when J.T. Barrett was there, the reason they made him come back because he was gun-shy, because he just couldn't sit back there. He didn't trust what he was seeing, and that's why he was taking off running all the time. So when Barrett came back his senior year, that just threw everything off. So when they opened the quarterback competition back up, Burrow says, you know what, enough of this. But Burrow sat there on the second, he sat there, and he said he was, you know, that's when they opened the thing back up, and then he transferred to LSU. And then on top of that, what this guy didn't tell you was Justin Fields was promised that job at Georgia. He was promised that. They're not telling that. And when Justin Fields didn't get that job, of course, like you said, Fromm coming in led him to the SEC championship game. Justin Fields went, man, I got no shot. So that's when he said he transferred out. So now Justin Fields coming to Ohio State, they would ask Joe Burrows to sit out another year. And Joe Burrows said, oh, no, man, I'm not having that.
Yeah, you know what? I don't have firsthand knowledge of that, but you know, James, you're making some good points, and that also feels like an embarrassment of riches. Like, you've just been running through names of quarterbacks at Ohio State and thinking about how good it turned out for Joe Burrow and you know.
I knew the beat writer. So I knew I had inside scoop on anyway, so I knew what was going on. And Urban Meyer in the press conference right up there in Ohio, he said exactly what you just said. You know, he said it was embarrassing that they had those many caliber quarterbacks at his disposal, but it was what it was. But for him to sit there and ask Joe Burrow to sit out when Justin Fields was coming in, had he done that, he wouldn't be where he is today and all his eligibility would have been gone.
Yeah, you know, James, and I, we really appreciate the call and some good points there. I have been particularly pleased with how things worked out for Burrow. One, because seems to be a guy that a lot of people around the program genuinely like. He has, I think, really embraced LSU, that community, and what a ridiculous string of quarterbacks Ohio State has had really since Urban Meyer became the head coach. Appreciate it very much. I want to transition here as we've talked a good bit about college football today, and we just talked a little bit of basketball with Greg, so piggybacking off that, excuse me. What do you expect tonight, Justin? Yeah. I think this is an interesting team. Auburn's strength of schedule, I think, hovering around the mid-40s. Paladins in the 100s, they've been fine. They really, like last year, they had that.
The loss to South Florida by 10 was interesting because, you know, they lose to Alabama, mm-hmm. and, you know, Alabama kind of ran and scored and kind of put them away in the second half.
Well,
the South Florida one was interesting.
Yeah, and you know, last year, Furman had a great win over Villanova. They've not played any teams of that caliber so far. They've played, I think this will be their sixth road game tonight. They've only played three at home. So, yeah.
Life of a small college when you're trying to get a good schedule.
Yeah, I don't think that they're going to be at odds with being on the road. They've done that a lot. So you got three players for Furman who look like they'll be the scoring leaders. You mentioned this earlier. They're a team that likes to force turnovers. And this feels like the new norm, but guess what? They're going to shoot a lot of threes.
Going to shoot a lot of threes, and they don't turn the ball. Like, they're very much kind of like what Auburn was last year. Force turnovers, shoot threes. And, you know, they haven't been quite as high caliber as they were last year, but they're still a very good team. Auburn's going to have to take care of the ball in this game. You can't give away possessions because this is a team that is designed to force turnovers and then try to hit you in transition with threes. This is going to be a game where they need to take care of the ball. This is going to be a good Javon McCormick game. Offensively, Javon has not been great this season in terms of his scoring and his production, but very good assist man. Keep those turnovers down. Keep those assists up. I think Auburn will be able to just take care of business in this one. But, yeah, ball security is going to be huge in this one. I think Auburn right now is Auburn's 12.5-point favorite. It's probably where you think you can be in this game. It's going to be very similar to some of the earlier games this season, Georgia Southern, South Alabama. I think Georgia Southern is probably the best example of a team. Very versatile, like as Greg said, tall, can kind of rebound. They're going to want to play fast and do a lot of different things.
Auburn's had 9 days off. You can look at that in one of two ways. Will they be rusty? I think you're looking at a team that has played objectively well to this point in the season, played seven games pretty quickly, so now they've had this.
They're going to have 9 days before the next one, too. So.
So they've had a nice break here. And look, Pearl hasn't been shy about telling his team publicly what they need to be better at.
Very interested to see what the crowd's going to be like tonight. 8 o'clock tip.
It's late.
Which is never good for the general population.
Mm-hmm.
It's also finals are coming up for students. Pearl says he hopes that they take a finals break and go out there. Hey, you're going to be staying up late anyway. Go take a couple hours. Go watch a basketball game. You know, I can't speak from a ton of experience there because when I was in college and I had to study for finals, it wasn't really hard for me because I was in journalism school. Like, my classes were not hard.
Yeah, our intern is an engineer, and so I'm like, it's like if I had an engineering test hanging over my head.
A little different.
Yeah.
A little different. It's different when you know, you're
doing what we did.
Well, yeah, and then like your finals in. I mean, and God bless them. But the editing and design class I took with their boy Scoop.
Yeah,
our final was to like lay out a few pages of a newspaper. And it's like it's something that I'd been doing every week for 2 years. So it was like our finals were not comparable
to put
in
it
terms
lightly.
Of most of the general population. But yeah, if you're a student out there and you want to take a break, you're gonna have to take a break. You don't want to cram too much.
And I really
go
don't,
watch some basketball.
I don't think they're going to come out. Like, I know that's a narrative here, as does Auburn look a little sloppy. I don't think they're going to. I think they're going to come out looking good. And I'm curious to see what area through those first seven games, in your mind, is Coach Pearl probably beating into his team's brain? Like, we've got to improve in what? Is there an area you can point to and go, hey, you know, there's an obvious one in free throw shooting at time, but like you can only analyze that so far because it's like just practice.
I think free throw shooting is probably the way to go, and I think Auburn just got to continue to get better with your half court defense, not just having goofy breakdowns. I think that's the key there. Other than that, this team has played really well on both ends. We're not perfect, but efficient and can beat you in a number of different ways.
Nationally, one of the things we are hearing most is that there's been a lot of people that have been surprised at how Auburn has picked up since their Final Four run. We'll get to break. We'll come back with more sports news for you also. 96.3 W Lee, Justin, it's that time.
Oh,
we've
yeah.
got Christmas music that started right Woo! After Thanksgiving. And, of course, we're still doing it as the final week of our college football challenge. Andrew Smith of Auburn won a $25 gift card from Niffers. The final week is upon us here, and it's the grand prize. So you will want to join that. The grand prize this season will be selected in just a few days, a 50-inch smart TV and more than $200 worth of gift cards. More Lunch Break straight ahead.
The Lunch Break on ESPN 106.7. You're hearing The Lunch Break on ESPN 106.7. Call 321-1390 or toll free 1-888-382-7502.
Welcome back to The Lunch Break on ESPN 106.7. Justin Ferguson, Painter Sharpless. Painter, the ESPN 12 Days of Christmas contest is back.
Not 8, not 9.
But 12.
12.
The winning is underway as well. We're giving away an incredible prize every weekday. 12 days, 12 prizes, 12 chances for you to win. We've given out an ADS security home system, a chef's table, dinner for six at Aricia, give away $300 gift certificate from Jewelry by Design. Today, I want to let everybody know the winner of today's prize was...
Drum roll.
David Petty of Auburn.
David!
David won a three... Oh, wait, sorry. Yes,
oh, no.
Won a $300 gift card from Center State Bank. $300 Visa gift card. All right.
$300 cash money / gift card money?
Yes, sir. Tomorrow, day five, $300 gift certificate from the car stereo shop.
The car... No, don't finish it,
no,
right?
Keep going.
The car stereo shop.
We love it. So, if you want a $300 gift certificate from the car stereo shop, you want to enter for your chance to win, all you got to do is text 12, the number 12, 1 and a 2, to 888-585-9494, or enter online at espnau.com.
Boom.
That's all you got to do.
It's easy.
The 12 Days of Christmas, live here from ESPN 106.7.
Justin, you always make fun of me. You come in here in the morning as I'm doing my local sports minute. Maybe some of you just heard it. Hopefully you didn't tune out when you heard my voice. And one of the things, you always walk in here and give me your best Painter doing his...
Oh, I can't.
You can.
No, you have to.
I'm Painter Sharpless with your ESPN 106.7 sports minute.
It's that one. It's that one for sure.
All right. We want to talk, or I want to talk, and maybe you will dive in here with me. You got a story up about Sean Shivers at The Athletic. He sort of...
Yeah, I'm currently dealing with something on Twitter about this story, so please talk about it, and I'll jump in a second.
So, I think one of the things here is that Shivers, for a lot of fans, at least in my mind, I felt like Auburn fans wanted to see more of him for a number of reasons. I think both talent and just... He's small, and so it's kind of endearing, like when you have a player who runs the way he does, sort of plays with what I would say in the cliche world is a chip on your shoulder, if you will, Justin. And it felt like there were some Auburn fans who wanted to see him get the ball more. He got the ball in a critical time for Auburn in the Iron Bowl, obviously, and he certainly made the most of it. Some great photos coming out of that one, too. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be a play that's remembered for a long time. Why was this significant? Why did you decide this is... The obvious part is it's the game-winning score.
Exactly.
But it's more than that.
This is so Sean Shivers. Like, this is his time, and like this is his style. He is a power back that does a lot of really...
He's a power back in my body, and he's, well, sort of.
He's a lot short. He's a lot faster than you, Payne.
More athletic, yeah, and I'm sure he weighs more, and he's a couple inches shorter, but it's preposterous to think that he... McKinney is a good football player, and he ran through that man, but it... Yeah, obviously it's significant in that it helped clinch the game for Auburn, but what else about this intrigued you? Because I think you've enjoyed, at least I believe, he's one of the players you've liked to cover over the last two seasons.
I mean, he is an anomaly as a football player. He's 5'7". He's less than 180 pounds.
5'7" in air quotations.
But he is a powerful back. I mean, when you see him run the ball and you live from high school, and of course this play on Xavier McKinney, he blows holes in people when he's running the football. And so that's...
Well, we have joked, it's like Harold Joyner is what you would expect Sean Shivers to be, more or less, and maybe that's not totally fair, and Shivers is to some extent what you would expect Harold Joyner to be. And maybe that's unfair, I don't know if that's how you feel about it, but at least just in terms of looking at the players and their style of running, I would not expect Shivers to enjoy contact the way he does.
And he does it. I mean, he just, there's nothing he knows more than just that.
All right, well, you know what, on that note, let's take a pause. Shadow is on the line. Shadow, I have been looking forward to this. I don't know if we've had much of an opportunity to talk this week, if at all. How are you?
Well, I am fine. And once again, I do want to congratulate Auburn on the victory, despite the fact that most people don't think that I am
Shadow, genuine. I know you care about Auburn. Yeah, you are. We may disagree on things, but I think at the end of the day, you want a positive result for Auburn.
Well, okay. Well, let's go this direction.
All right.
Do you know how many people that Alabama lost on their defense this year?
They lost two critical players at linebacker, and they may have lost more than that. Shadow, how many?
Well, I'm just... You know, it's not that I know the answer for a fact, but I know that they lost three or four frontline players. And the reason I say that is I just got through talking to a big Alabama man. So, with that said, and you do know that we lost Tua. So, and listen, guys, I'm not trying to be negative, but, so if Alabama had had Tua, And did not lose that many players, you think we would have beat Alabama?
It does become a harder sell, right? Like, do I think they're capable? Yeah, but a lot did need to go Auburn's way. So I can understand that argument. I guess my point there would be in 2017, and it is a little different here because we're talking about one player versus a number of players. You're right, Shadow. But like in 2017, no one had any sympathy for Auburn that they lost the SEC Offensive Player of the Year and Kerryon Johnson. They just had to figure it out. And you know what? Auburn didn't. Georgia beat them.
Well, listen, the point, last year the score was 50-20 Alabama, right?
I don't remember the score, but yeah, it was more than a three-touchdown win, something to that effect. Yeah, you probably know, Shadow.
So now if Auburn's made the big turn, you know, because you probably had two phone calls this week about getting rid of Mr. Malzahn, right?
That has died down. Yeah, that has died down for the moment.
Yeah. So most people, despite the fact that I think that's a terrible decision, they pretty much put the future of Gus Malzahn on one game, right?
I would say until he loses a game next year, and then the conversation starts back up, Shadow.
Okay, so now that we have beat Alabama...
And I don't think that that's wise, but I think that's what will happen. Sorry to cut you off. Go ahead.
And so next year, what's going to be the score? You think Auburn's going to beat Alabama next year?
I'm getting a little ahead of myself here because it's a year down the road. I'm just not willing to make a prediction like that. But you know what? If you want to at least look at it broadly, Shadow, they'll be playing in Tuscaloosa, and that's going to make it harder. However, if Auburn gets an offensive line together, and we're projecting because we don't know what that'll look like, we don't know what Auburn's defensive line will look like, although I'm willing to bet it will be good, even though it won't be elite. Auburn's got a good chance in Tuscaloosa, but at the same time, things change a lot from year to year. Look at Auburn, the biggest case perhaps ever, 2012, a 3-9 season. A year later, they find themselves in the national championship. So I don't know if it's fair to make that projection right now.
Well, what would you say? I mean, let's take a look at what in the world Bruce Pearl has done to the basketball program. And I'm telling you right now, it would not surprise me if we go back to the Final Four. We're already getting discussion of a man named Green. Mm-hmm. And if a man named Green comes to Auburn and combines with a man named Cooper, what in the world will the future hold for the basketball program?
Shadow, it would be, I mean, you're talking about a team that goes to the Final Four, gets even more talent, makes another run. We'll see how far they go this season. And then you get... If you get Cooper and then you get another guy, whether it's a guy like you're talking about, Jalen Green, Greg Brown is another one who's right up there with him as well. Either one of those guys, adding to Sharif Cooper, you're talking about the two best recruits Auburn has ever had
playing together
on a team that's got nothing but momentum, and you're now looking at a team that is on the verge of becoming a perennial, you know, contender.
Top 15 team. I think two things that Pearl has done this season that I've been excited about, and Auburn fans should be excited about too. One, there's clearly consistency. There's clearly consistency with this team right now. And the other is that they're doing it in a different way.
Go ahead, Shadow.
And all Auburn has done with their basketball program, see, because it wasn't too long ago when nobody knew what to do about the basketball program. Nobody had no answers. But then they brought in one man. So I'm telling you the same thing. You know, listen, guys, we can be positive as we want, but Auburn's been averaging about four losses. So I'm just saying, Auburn deserves better. Auburn deserves championships. So if Auburn brings one man to their football program, like they brought one man to the basketball program, it'll turn around. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, we finally heard from Shadow this week, and it's...
I would say he was...
Interesting.
Yeah. The thing I was saying, and Shadow... Appreciate it. Consistency. Auburn now has won a regular season title, and I don't have to tell people around here that, and now a conference tournament. Obviously, the Final Four was a punctuation mark. They come back this year. They're ranked just inside the top 25, more because I don't know if people felt like they knew what to do with Auburn, but they're consistent again for the third straight year, and the style of play is totally different than what it's been for the last two or three seasons, and it's still working. I think both of those signs are extremely encouraging.
Yeah, no, it is definitely. I mean, you were talking about a program that had very little success in basketball. This is how you build a program. You lay the foundation. You get really good teams to want to make guys like Sharif Cooper and Isaac Okoro and then any other big-name recruit to want to come play
at Auburn. Just getting a visit with one of those guys would have been laughable 5 years ago.
Right, and so it was what guys like Jared Harper did and what guys like Bryce Brown did. It takes a combination of convincing high-level players to come to your school and build something special. And it takes also a combination, and I think one of the things that Bruce Pearl does really well is scouting and finding guys that were under the radar to stand out. Bryce Brown. Finding guys like Anthony McLemore, finding guys like, if it holds, looking ahead in the future, if a guy like Devin Cambridge can be like what a guy like Malik Dunbar was, that combined with getting these big-name recruits, I mean, that's how you build a program. And it's just, once you get into this moment, it can start becoming a cycle. And in college basketball, it's easier for these things to become a cycle because you have less scholarships you have to fill, you can put more attention on certain individual players, and just... let it churn, let it churn, let it churn. And so it is, I mean, it's what he did at Tennessee. And he laid the blueprint, and he just followed it to a letter at Auburn. And I think he even exceeded it, because at Auburn, he went to a Final Four, which is something he never did at Tennessee.
Ed, hang tight. We're going to get to our last break. We'll come back with Ed's call, and we'll wrap up also with what's on tonight. Justin, let you know what's happening with our 12 Days of Giving. Also, we've got Auburn High School basketball for you tonight. That'll start just a little bit before 6. And you can hear Scott Bagwell. He'll have you covered on 96.3 W Lee. Of course, we're in the Kia of Auburn studio and the drive with Bill Cameron. As always, we'll be at Kia of Auburn on Friday. More lunch break straight ahead.
You're on the lunch break on ESPN 106.7.
Just a few minutes to go here on the lunch break. Not quite Friday. We are getting close. Yes, I know my days of the week, folks, but we are nearly there. Ed's going to help us get through the finish line today. Ed, what is on your mind, my friend?
Hey, guys. I appreciate y'all taking the call. I apologize. I can't talk just right now. I've got something that half my face is kind of paralyzed for about 6 weeks, but... anyway, I wanted to call to make just a couple of points. I'm not going to talk about basketball, but I do think it's hard to equate basketball with anything right now because I think Bruce Pearl is an exceptional coach in both recruiting and coaching. But as far as football, you know, y'all know that I've been critical of Gus, and I think that because Gus is solely responsible for the offense, and we lost the three games that we lost this year were pretty much because our offense was inept.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, pretty predictable. You can hand those three losses on Gus, and, you know, that's fair. But by the same token, I don't know many Auburn people that know football that would be really comfortable if we had punted that ball away and Bama had got it, that we could have stopped Alabama from scoring at least a field goal.
Yeah, you should have been. You should have felt that way. I don't think that's unreasonable.
Nope, not at all.
And I think you've got to give that to Gus. So, but also, as far as Bama missing a couple of players, you could probably take any of Bama's wins this year, and you could take three teams of just scatter them out, however, and you could combine their five star recruits, and it would not equal what Bama put on the field. By the same, and also, you can take Tua and, you know, Dylan Moses out of the picture, and Bama still put out more 4- and 5-star recruits than Auburn did.
Oh, yeah.
And more than LSU, although LSU probably had a little bit better talent.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know,
we lose Ed?
I think we did.
Oh, well, uh-oh. Ed, you can give us a call back.
Yeah, if you give us a call back, I'd like to finish that up. Weird how we dropped him on that.
3-2-1-13-9-8.
Yeah, I mean, to Ed's point, and hopefully we can get him to call back here real shortly. It is something to kind of, you know, Auburn fans really happy, and they should be, about the way, you know, winning the Iron Bowl and the kind of the way it happened and the way Malzahn made the decisions, how the offense came in that one. But, yeah, I think this is the big thing about this upcoming season is, like, there are going to have to be some changes on the offense side of the ball. They're not going to be able to rest on their laurels. Because the Iron Bowl was really the only game of the year where the offense, you know, really put it together against a good opponent. And Alabama's defense wasn't at 100%, kind of like Shadow has mentioned and Ed mentioned there. But you got to figure out, all right, can you do this against LSU next season? Can you do this against Georgia next season? Can you do this against Alabama again now on the road next season? That's going to be the big question.
I've heard some rumblings about Kenny Dillingham, and that's been odd to me. Like, I
will be very interesting to see if Mike Norvell becomes a head coach at a Power 5 school.
Sure.
Would Dillingham, and not to say anything about it, Dillingham made the move to Auburn. He gets to coach and be an offensive coordinator at a Power 5 school, right?
Yeah, it's a step in the right direction.
His connection, though, is with Norvell. This is the only year he's done worked with Auburn or worked with Gus Malzahn. So it wouldn't be surprising to see if that would be the bounce.
If you tell me, though, that he leaves, I don't think it's because they're trying to mix things up on offense. It's because he's getting a better opportunity. Yeah, but I think it's because Dillingham is getting.
And then you would look at a guy like Chad Morris. You would look at a guy, you know.
That could be a pretty great pairing, I think.
You could see. We'll see. I just know that.
But my feeling there is like Dillingham did his part. I don't, you know, for all the frustration there was at times about Auburn's ability to throw the ball and Bo Nix, like I don't think that Dillingham by any, they're going to mix things up unless he wants to leave. Is that the vibe you get? Like, it makes sense for him, right? Like you follow Norvell. You've already mentioned earlier in today's show, maybe he ends up at Florida State. That'd be a fantastic position to be in if you're Dillingham. Otherwise, I think he's probably pretty happy here.
Yeah, no, exactly. Like, so if Norvell went to Florida State, I wouldn't be surprised to see him go to Florida State. It wouldn't mean Auburn was trying to run him off.
Right.
It would just be kind of that go back to the guy that you're more familiar with, right? And it would be at a Power 5 school. So the move that you had made to go to Auburn reunites you with it at a big-name school.
It got you what you wanted. All right.
Exactly.
Ed, we appreciate it. And
Hopefully we can hear back from him. But if not, let's go ahead and get going with what's on tonight.
Time now for What's On Tonight.
I've got to take my breath away. Stuck in my head now.
Okay. SEC Network at 8 o'clock tonight. Furman and Auburn. Number 14, Auburn. I think Auburn, the rest, kind of calling it down has really helped them. They need to take care of the ball. It's got to be a big Javon McCormick game and making sure that Auburn doesn't get loose with it. Contest on the three-pointers. If you do that, you'll be able to take care of business and get another good win over a quality opponent that's going to be in the hunt for their conference.
Not surprising, but last year, this time, Javon McCormick was drawing some criticism from his head coach. This year, a little bit of criticism, but not in the way you might expect. He's pleased with McCormick's play, especially in assisting his teammates. He wants McCormick to be more selfish shooting the ball.
Yeah, and he's had a slow start to this season shooting. You know, he did really well in that exhibition game, but it hadn't really kind of correlated to good offensive performances. This could be a big game for him to step up and take some control of it. Fox 720 tonight, Thursday night football, the Cowboys and the Bears.
Thoughts, concerns, do you care at all? Are you concerned?
I mean, the Cowboys could, like, lose and still be leading their division.
It's so bad, them and the Eagles both. And how have the Eagles, I mean, I know it's a sport of parody,
really,
but dang, dude,
yeah,
you guys are competing in a Super Bowl.
The Eagles have been really bad. The Giants and the Washington are horrible. So, God, it's going to be.
Poor Chris Hummel. He's a Washington fan.
Oh, he is?
Yeah.
Oh, I liked him.
My family that's up there is all but giving up on them. They're just into hockey now.
Yeah, heck, I would be too. Hey, the Nationals won the World Series.
yeah, suddenly they were all Nationals fans.
Yeah, I don't blame them. NBA TV, 6:30 tonight, nationally televised NBA game, the Rockets and the Raptors.
The Rockets.
Should be interesting. Pascal Siakam against a team that doesn't have a ton of front court talent, but a lot of back court talent is going to be fun, I think. NBC Sports Network, 2:15 this afternoon. Arsenal taking on Brighton and Hove Albion.
Arsenal.
The Seagulls of Arsenal. Of Brighton against the Gunners.
Young Gunner. And some Seagulls. That's an interesting mascot.
Mm-hmm.
They call
Brighton and Hove Albion?
Do they call
their mascot is just like their logo is just a circle with a seagull in it.
Hey, sometimes short and sweet. It's kind of where you can make your money.
Your Christmas pick tonight, ABC at 7. A Charlie Brown Christmas. The classic. Probably the ultimate classic.
Where's my man Snoopy?
Mm-hmm. Getting everybody doing the dance.
Is he your favorite? Is that the default favorite Charlie Brown character is the Sweet Doge, Snoopy?
Probably. I don't know. I like Woodstock.
You guys both said Woodstock at the same time.
Yeah, Woodstock. Especially when Woodstock gets mad and he starts, and the little lion pops up over his head.
What's the name
of
the friend that always gets the football pulled from him?
It's Charlie.
Oh, it is Charlie. What's the blonde haired friend name? I forget. Isn't there a little blonde friend
the
with
kid who plays
blanket?
The piano?
I guess so.
The blanket is Linus.
Oh, man, I'm getting these all.
He's got like little stringy hair. Yeah. And then the blonde haired kid who plays piano is Schroeder.
So I'm supposed to be going to an Auburn basketball game tonight, but seeing how I know so little about Charlie Brown, I might just stay home and watch that.
You should probably go to the basketball game.
Okay.
The Dan Pat Memorial HBO pick of the evening.
RIP, we love you, Dan.
HBO 2 at 11:40, RoboCop.
Arnold Schwarzenegger,
not in this movie.
Not in this film, as I pretty confidently said in hour one and was willing to challenge both our intern and Justin on.
Yeah.
And a quick Google search found out I was wrong again.
HGTV at 9, finally Painter House Hunters International is in Sheffield, England.
Love it.
Love it.
Love it, folks. Probably wouldn't live there, but would enjoy a visit and a pint. All that jazz. How about Lane Kiffin? We started off the show. Have we gotten any movement on this in the last 2 hours?
Doesn't seem like. I don't think there's going to be any official movement because
He's got a
conference championship game. Also, I think the same thing with Florida State and possibly
Norvell.
They got a conference championship game to play. So might be Monday before we start hearing some moves.
It's going to be fun Sunday between, I think, the coaching stuff will heat up and we'll get that final ranking.
You remember that Justin Fuente was named like the Virginia Tech head coach like right as soon as the Memphis played in the conference title game a few years back? Do you remember
like
that?
Like the minute it ended?
It might have broken as the game was going on. I can't remember.
I'm sure he would like that. I'm sure coaches would prefer it. Wait until after.
Exactly. So
please,
we'll see.
They say.
I like the idea of Kiffin and Ole Miss, though.
Yeah, let's get those two together. If Ole Miss is going to be 8-4, 7-5, 9-3, you name it, whatever. Let's do it with some excitement, folks.
Even a fun losing season.
If I'm going to go to Hoover once a year with Justin and we're going to share a bed, then let's make it.
No.
Okay. We didn't do that. Justin was too bourgeois.
Media Days is back in Atlanta next year.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
It was a talking point throughout SEC.
Because they're going to make it a rotating thing.
You didn't care for that. Most of you all actually seem to prefer the Birmingham setup to Atlanta.
Easy. It's just easy, and you know it in your sleep. the media days, like, you had to go outside a lot to walk between things. And,
right.
And not that, you know, it was hard.
Not the end of the world.
No, but it was just like when you're so used to everything being on the same floor and you can kind of bounce around quicker, it was a little different.
So we hit on it briefly. We're running out of time here, but you put up a story recently about Sean Shivers. If you would, tell everybody where they can find that, all that jazz.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at The Athletic. Well, at Jay Ferguson. You can read my stuff at TheAthletic.com. I'm trying to show Sean Shivers that I'm not dissing him.
If you follow Jay Ferguson AU on Twitter, you can find out why he's laughing.
Yeah, this is probably one of the most bizarre things that have happened to me on Twitter. It was
a complimentary story in a way. Like,
yeah, I think he took one of the quotes the wrong way, and I think it might have been a joke from somebody else, and it just all rolls together. But main thing is my story says, Sean Shivers is a really awesome running back, and he made one of the greatest plays I've ever seen in the Iron Bowl. And you can read all about how that guy did that moment and made that all happen. All right.
Sweet. That's it. We're out of here. Logan, thanks for being great. Logan helped me with pop-ups on the computer. Somehow I managed to infest my computer with pop-ups. Thanks for taking care of that, Logan. He's at Jay Ferguson AU. I'm at Paint Sharpless. Stephen A. Smith coming up next. The Drive with Bill Cameron. As always, from 4 to 6 today. Got AHS basketball on 96.3 W. Lee. Tune in just before 6. Scott Bagwell on the call. Thanks for hanging out with us. We'll be back tomorrow at 11. Excited to have Brody Miller of The Athletic on to talk about the SEC championship game from LSU's perspective. Plus, Opelika head football coach Eric Speakman joins us on Friday as well. That's going to do it for us. Until then, keep it toasty. We'll be right back.